From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. The phone app that appears to be the cause of the problems in Iowa is the same app that the Nevada Democratic Party has been planning to use in its caucuses coming up on February 22nd. Cap Radio has confirmed this. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. Meanwhile, there are still no results from that first contest of this presidential election year. And you may have heard that the Iowa Democratic Party chair says there was a coding system problem. The system had not been hacked. Results, however, are not in. If we get word during this hour, we will, of course, report them to you right away. On the phone is a man who knows the Iowa experience, though not quite this 2020 version. He is political consultant Bill Burton. He was national press secretary for Barack Obama during the first Obama presidential campaign, and then became deputy White House press secretary in the Obama administration. Hi, Bill. Thanks for joining us on Insight.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good. So what do you know about what happened in Iowa or what's happening right now?
Well, I know that it was an unmitigated disaster based in untested technology and, you know, failing to put in place a backup system that they should have had. Now, I don't share the same view as many that this is robbing one person or two people of their moment in the sun, because I think once the real results are out, smart campaigns will find a way to maximize their the amount of exposure that they get for their moment. But it certainly is a real embarrassment for the state of Iowa.
What else are we getting from all of this? What's at stake here? Maybe the tradition of caucusing, this phone app that's going to be used at least in Nevada, maybe some of the other additional caucuses coming up. What's some of the bigger picture?
Well, I'd be surprised if they still use this app in Nevada. I know that they're contracted to do so, but I think that given the performance in Iowa, if they do in fact still use it, there will be so many more controls in place. You know, one of the bits of news I read this morning was that the problems with the app were so obvious that the Polk County Democratic chair, that's where Des Moines is in Iowa, the biggest county in the state by far, he, in the week before, said precincts in his county were not going to be using the app. They're just going to phone in their results like they had done every single year. Now, the Democratic Party wasn't set up to receive them, and still it was a disastrous process, but I think the technology is not going to be around in the same form for any more caucuses going forward.
We are seeing that Lee Fang from The Intercept reported that the Iowa Democratic Party spent more than $63,000 to Shadow, which is the name of the company, the name of the app, and the Nevada Democratic Party reportedly paid $58,000 to the same company. What about the idea of technology in caucusing or in primaries, perhaps voting someday? Where are you on this question?
Well, I think that there should be a paper trail wherever the voting takes place or however the mechanisms work. But that doesn't mean we don't need very good public interest technology out there, and the development of it is very important. Now, when you consider that the Iowa Democratic Party spent $63,000 to this company to develop this app, that number is actually phenomenally small when you consider the amount of millions upon millions of dollars that were spent in that state advertising for this election, let alone the donations that came into the Iowa Democratic Party to get this right. So, you know, when you get a price tag like that, that's $63,000, frankly, you get what you pay for. Like, this seems to me like the sort of thing, it's the most important event that happened in our democracy yesterday. It should be locked tight, solid, the most reliable thing that you could imagine, and it just wasn't.
Is this enough to be the end of the caucus system, at least in Iowa?
Well, you know, in defense of the caucus system, and I've been on a handful of presidential campaigns, ones that have won in Iowa and ones that didn't, and I will say that folks in Iowa take the process very, very seriously. And many of the caucus goers go out and they actually meet the candidates, all of the candidates, once or twice over the course of the process. And there's not really any other states where that happens. Now, I think that the diversity is an issue in the state. Obviously, the technical aspects of how this all went down is a problem, whether or not a caucus is purely representative of a democracy. Like, all those things are problems. But in defense of Iowa, Iowans take this process very seriously, and we should have a vetting process in which voters can get up close and personal with candidates and really take the time to get to know them and get to tell the rest of the country about them.
The phone app wasn't the whole story because, as you said, there was this backup hotline that was set up. It was jammed when caucus leaders tried to call in. There were these new paper ballots that apparently weren't all being counted, or they ran out of ballots in some places. And there were still stories about coin tosses, which is some of the old-fashioned way. So there is a lot to be unraveled here beyond the phone app, I think.
I think that's right. You know, if nothing else, it sounds to me, and I was talking to somebody inside the Iowa Democratic Party this morning, it sounds to me like the backup system they had with the hotline just did not have enough phone lines and people on the phone lines to work them in order to make any sort of backup work. Anytime you've got a contingency plan, it has to be ready for the full freight of the problem to manifest itself. And it sounds like this was nowhere close. Now, in Iowa, there's something like 1,700 precincts around the state. That's not that many, right? To have a phone center that can handle that number of phone calls on the most important night for Iowa politics that happens every 4 years. So it sounds like there's a lot of questions and a lot of problems. I'm confident that folks will take a hard look at it and get the answers right. But for now, it just, what a mess.
I'm talking with Bill Burton. He is communication strategist and a political consultant who served in the Obama administration. So frame this up now for the candidates who most, if not all, have moved on to New Hampshire, the next primary.
Well, it's hard to know exactly who's going to get the biggest bounce out of this. But if you're a candidate that came in fourth or fifth place, it looks like you get to live another day because there's no news cycle that's trying to force you out of the contest, particularly when the results are being cast into some doubt. But I think that if you're Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, I think all those campaigns feel very good moving forward here, and they seem like they're going to have some energy that they can really tap into, and New Hampshire is going to be hopefully more directional in terms of where this contest is going. But this is the first time in a long time that Iowa hasn't winnowed the field that night. I was on Dick Gephardt's campaign in 2004, and you know, he was the favorite going into the Iowa caucus, and ended up in fourth place, 10.8%. Not that anybody's still counting, but you know, he dropped out that night essentially, and we didn't have any of that last night because the results were so in flux. And so, I think that New Hampshire is probably going to be a lot more definitional to this race as a result than Iowa has been.
Can you tell me a story or two from the Iowa caucus experience on January 3rd, 2008, and working with then-candidate Barack Obama?
Sure. It's one of my favorite nights in all of politics. I was in Des Moines with then-Senator Obama and the team, and you know, we had the smartest folks in politics working on our team in Iowa. And you know, as the results started rolling in, we had a This was one of the surprises to me about last night, actually, is that the other campaigns didn't have very sophisticated reporting mechanisms themselves that they put out. Even Bernie Sanders only put out 40% of the results. But that night, the Obama campaign had all the results. They were pouring in. I was relaying the information to reporters who were out in the press stands at our event as it was happening. And, you know, every number that was coming in was better and more positive for the campaign. And then finally, the results were in. Senator Obama had won the Iowa caucus, and I remember just standing there sort of numb, thinking, that was it. Senator Obama was going to be president of the United States. And obviously there was a lot between here and there, but to see him come up on stage and say those now famous words, they said this day would never come, was an awesome experience that the folks in that room and a lot of people around the country won't ever forget.
In some of the polls I saw, he was leading, so this wasn't a total surprise, and there were some points in the gap there. I believe John Edwards was in second place, and then Hillary Clinton was in third, correct?
That's right. So the question that everybody had going into that night wasn't whether or not directionally, whether we weren't ascended or not, because it clearly seemed like we were. The Des Moines Register poll came out and showed that we were on the move. The question, though, was, you know, would the Bradley effect depress white voters for a black candidate for president? And people didn't know. It now seems so obvious that, of course, you know, people were going to embrace Senator Obama. But then there was real uncertainty of whether or not there would be a real drop-off in the polling. And you know, the fact that there wasn't gave us real hope. And it was the reason that we were able to get such a massive bounce in South Carolina, because a lot of African-American voters that were sticking around with Hillary Clinton's campaign saw that Senator Obama could be attractive to white voters, and it broke that race wide open for us. And in a state where we were down by a lot, we were able to win by a tremendous margin with the momentum coming out of Iowa.
Will you explain the Bradley effect a bit and talk about who in the race right now might have the same sort of impact or the same sort of division for the voters in ballots they cast?
Well, the Bradley effect, and although I know a lot of Californians are more familiar with this, I wasn't here at the time, but when Mayor Bradley from Los Angeles was running, he oftentimes, and correct me if this isn't your memory of it, but oftentimes his numbers, his actual vote totals were much lower than what polls would say for him, because people may claim that they would vote for him, but not actually do it when push came to shove. And so we weren't sure if that would be the case for President Obama. Now, in this race, you've got, you know, when it started, we had Senator Harris in the race. You had Joaquin Castro in the race. Pete Buttigieg, who's a gay American, is in this race. And then there's still questions of how women perform in electoral politics, as a result of, you know, watching what happened with Hillary Clinton when she ran this last time. But, you know, the truth is, watching Democratic politics for the last couple of cycles here, it looks like, you know, the top woman candidate also, what right now is getting a big bounce that is new, that wasn't necessarily there before 2016. But in 2018, there was a rash of women candidates who were able to win because of the enthusiasm that there was for women candidates. But in terms of you know, Pete Buttigieg is a gay candidate for president of the United States. You know, there are a lot of questions of whether or not folks will sign on to that campaign. But I think that he ran a great race and he showed a lot of strength in Iowa. Whether or not he won, it's not clear. But it looks like his campaign is very strong. And so in Democratic politics, anyway, it looks like there is an openness to candidates who aren't just white men.
And I agree with you. The Bradley effect ended up being a theory about whether voters would admit in a poll who they would vote for. In that case, it was more about race. Maybe the modern version isn't about race, but it's about the polarizing effect of President Trump and where voters are in what they say they're going to do and what they really do when it comes down to casting a vote. But I want to turn us in a different direction in terms of California and have you talk to me about the Bloomberg campaign. He's been spending a lot of time in California. You might know that he was up in Sacramento yesterday. Blaring headline across the Sacramento Bee today is that he says he's going to take California. What about Iowa? What happened last night? And how the Bloomberg factor will play into voters who might have cast early ballots. Those early ballots are landing in their mailboxes right now, but might now decide to wait.
Well, this is actually one of the most interesting dynamics about what happened yesterday. Because I've long said that the impact of Iowa is going to have an outsized impact in California, in large part because, like you said, we're getting our ballots. Mine still hasn't come in the mail, but I'm sure it'll come today or tomorrow. And the person who wins Iowa was likely going to get a big surge of votes from people who voted very early when they first get their ballots. And I think that would have helped somebody like Bernie Sanders, whose voters are younger, a lot of voters of color who vote later in the process, which means their votes wouldn't be recorded and reported until much later, you know, weeks into the counting of those ballots. But if he were to win Iowa and get a big bounce on Super Tuesday night, that could be very definitional for him in this race. But the fact that there's a muddy result, I think may well end up meaning that Mike Bloomberg did benefit a lot from yesterday because he's been in California a lot. His ads are up a lot on television, a lot digitally. And I think that there's a swath of Californians who are attracted to the message that he has. You know, but I think that a lot of voters are going to be like me, an undecided Democratic primary voter, and, you know, wait and see how these contests sort of develop before casting the final ballot.
When do you think we're going to get results from Iowa? Do you have any idea?
Well, the Iowa Democratic Party is doing a call with the campaigns within the next half hour or so. And my guess is that on that call, they'll give some idea of when they're going to put the results out. But it's hard for me to imagine that they can't get this done today. I'm all for, the results need to be accurate, first and foremost, so that the process isn't completely undermined altogether. But, I mean, they need to move on this today. And there's no reason that they can't count 1,700 precinct locations in a 24-hour period. And we're at hour 16 since the caucuses started. So, clock's ticking.
So the New Hampshire primary is February 11th, and then on to Nevada. The caucuses are planned for February 22nd. Would you tell Nevada to scrap that phone app system right now?
I would say get in some of the smartest people in the party to take a hard look at the technology and make sure that it's ready to go. I'm very suspect of software that costs $50,000, $60,000 being in charge of something that's so crucially important to our democracy. Like, there's nothing more important than this primary process right now. And so they need to spend at least as much as they paid for that technology to make sure that it is fully operational and working, you know, in a way that people can be confident about its results.
I think we'll have part two of this conversation, Bill, when we know who's coming out on top of these primaries, because it might be early to talk about the convention, even though you might have had very clear ideas a few weeks ago. So can we do this again sometime soon?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're headed towards a contested convention, so I'd be happy to talk about it.
Well, let me ask you, a four-way race, a three-way, what do you think?
I think there's a decent chance that it's at least three folks make it all the way to the convention, but it could be four. You've got a lot of candidates who have a lot of money, who have very strong supporters, and who are excited about, you know, who the right person is to take on President Trump. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario where the Democratic Party comes out of a contested convention stronger, because people will be so angry, and we'll just have to see. It's a scary thing to consider, but I think, unfortunately, quite possible.
Thank you so much, Mr. Burton. I'm glad to have your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. That is Bill Burton. He is a political consultant and communication strategist. He was Deputy White House Press Secretary in President Obama's administration. You can find continuing news about the Iowa caucuses at capradio.org/insight. And you can hear President Trump's State of the Union message tonight. NPR's special coverage starts at 6 p.m. in the West. Up next, the Sacramento water skier who won both the National Male Athlete of the Year and Disabled Male Athlete of the Year awards. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.